back. Welcome. You've made it to the end of the road like Boyz II Men sing about.
The last category review.
We've come.
The beautiful voice.
There was a season, let me get this off my chest, of Making the Band on MTV.
This is supposed to be the hook just for the people.
Follow me here.
Okay.
They wanted us to believe that an impromptu Boyz II Men end of the road sing and repeat callback broke out as two men were rap battling to see who would win the final bed in the house to sleep in. So, like, one guy just started singing it. And
this was in your dream last night?
This happened. When? This was on MTV in 2000-dickety-six pickup sticks.
Right.
And he sing to the... And everybody else starts singing, like, 15 men. And we were supposed to buy as viewers that this wasn't planned?
This is on the recorded videotape that's next to the hair doll, next to the shrine of Boyz II Men in your house?
Diddy. Diddy. We're Mike and Oscar. I'm your host, Mike. This is my co-host also, Mike.
We're barely sane at this
point. We're not doing well.
Doing a marathon of recordings.
I feel very sick. We're here for the final one. We've made it to the end of the
road. We're our best pod yet, though.
Our best picture Oscar category review. We have 9 nominees to get through, and if you don't know how these work by now, where have you been? Why has it not been here? Binge us. We have a billion episodes to get you ready for this Sunday coming up.
Oh, we're totally bingeable.
I hope so. That's the idea.
Listen to us on loop.
Yeah.
Do our bidding.
And I sing a lot, too, so you don't even need to take a break.
He doesn't sing that much. I don't want to lose them all. He sings once every 3 episodes.
I wish I knew more words to that song because I would have sang them right now, but I don't.
I'm glad you don't. Glad you don't.
If you don't know how these episodes go, these Oscar category reviews, we've done them for the Big 7 categories. We call them the Big 7 because those are the 4 acting categories: Best Original Screenplay, Best Director, and Best Picture.
We like to coin phrases.
We left out Best Adapted Screenplay because Mike and I have not gone through the trouble of reading the books that these were based off of, so we didn't think that would be fair.
Correct.
How we do these is we take the 5 as they've been nominees. In this case, with Best Picture, there's 9 nominees that the Academy has given us, and we go through each one individually. We talk about why every nominee will win the Oscar for its given category and why it will not win this Sunday, March 4th. So who's going to take home gold off the stage on March 4th, Oscar Sunday?
Right.
Afterwards, we will do what we call perfecting perfection, which is something we borrow from our Oscars retrospective podcast, where we take the nominees as they're given us and we re-rank them in order from this case 9 to 1, one being obviously our favorite of this field, who we think of these 9 should win.
Yes, sir. And after that refresher here, if you are coming to this format for the first time, you know, go back and listen to all our pods, even after the Oscars, because we think basically it's an overview of the category itself. We do get into some of the projection game in terms of discussing things, but for the most part, we're kind of comparing and contrasting. We're making the arguments for and against, so it gives you the overview at the end of the day without spoilers. So hopefully, as an on-demand service in terms of looking at our backlog of episodes, these can come in handy for you, even in friggin' April, when you're just looking at movies to rent on VOD, Netflix and chillin', whatever you're doing.
Yeah, that's the hope. You know, we like having these as kind of callbacks to you to make sure you know what is worth your time and what is not. And in that vein, I guess with these movies, we're going to talk about why they're worth their time.
Yeah, I mean, if you're saying, I feel like watching a nominee for Best Costume Design from 2017, and you're in the future of 2021, then you have a place to go.
I blacked out for the last couple of seconds. What'd you say?
Well, the more apt metaphor would have been like Best Original Screenplay.
Yes.
But the film school kid in 5 years from now when we're still doing this.
And if she wants to see something for Best Costume Design, you need to break up and think about your options.
We are recording too much. Let's get into it, Mike.
Let's do our first nominee. We go alphabetically, so let's I guess do an overview first of the category. We'll go through these alphabetically. So we're going to be talking about today Call Me By Your Name, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, I'm just reading a list now, The Post, Shape of Water, and 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Those are your 9 nominees. We start with Call Me By Your Name. Why will Call Me By Your Name win the Best Picture?
Because it's one of the most refreshing, optimistic movies of this bunch, which can get very loathsomely
heavy.
Depressing and heavy at times, even though you do have some comedy. It's a lot of dark comedy involved. Because their fans are extremely active on the internet, in the blogosphere, in the zeitgeist, they are driving Call Me By Your Name to a lot of online Best Picture wins. So if that has any effect on the Academy itself. If the audience award favorite is in fact the Call Me By Your Name faithful driving them to that award win, maybe it has a chance.
Yeah, we've also spent a lot of time this year praising the genre-bending film, the unconventional, the against types of movies. Yes. And this is a very unconventional, quote-unquote, gay love story that is really anything but a gay love story.
Yeah, right? It's just a romance. It's just right. A summer romance, beautiful northern Italy. It's one of our most popular episodes for a reason. Because it's a happy thing to talk about for once after all this
nothing makes me
doom
smile
and gloom.
Like Army Hammer's dancing.
It's the best GIF on the internet. This movie's launched Timothée Chalamet's career, Armie Hammer's career.
And it legitimately took a piece of produce and made it a main talking point throughout the summer, late summer and early fall.
It's a landmark movie for a reason. And it's also a mainstream movie. So I'm gonna hope that it gets more play in theaters after the Oscars. So we'll see. I think it's got a chance.
Yeah, don't sleep on the Academy wanting to overcorrect itself, too, because when you think of biggest gaffes in Academy history... Well, after last year, now number one is Faye Dunaway with La La Land.
Right.
And number two, up there probably somewhere, is Brokeback Mountain not winning the Best Picture and instead going to Crash.
Right, but that was more of an issue movie with Brokeback Mountain.
Would be an overcorrection to redo it here. I'm not saying it's proper. I'm just saying be aware if it did pull it off. But, again, it's not a favorite.
Not a favorite for a reason. We're making the counter-argument now.
Let's talk about why Call Me By Your Name will not win the Best Picture Oscar.
The internet doesn't vote for Best Picture. The audience award isn't the Best Picture winner or what drives the Best Picture winner. You know, the pros vote for this. The Academy is made up of not only the pros, but the elite pros. The pros who have won this thing before, won Oscars before, who have spent 20 years in the business.
But
the Academy,
they have had they've made it a point to be more diverse in every way in the last 2 years. So good on them, and maybe that helps this movie. But you're right. The passion for this movie doesn't seem to be in the professional world so much as it does driven by the fans that love this movie.
Yes, so... the fact that it's not an issue movie may, in fact, worked against it in this regard. I wonder if the Academy still votes along quote-unquote party lines or issue lines. Unfortunately, that seems to be somewhat the case years past after the Oscars So White movement. Moonlight wins. Do we really have to make that? I mean, I don't think I'm going out on a limb here to tell you that the Academy can be reactionary, and therefore, after the Time's Up movement, is this movie going to win? I don't know.
Just on the face of the movie, though, without even going into the social issues attached to it, or that may not be attached to it, as you said, the movie alone, the buildup inches along for the first 40 or 50 minutes, and it's up against some big suspense-filled movies from beginning to end, like The War Epic and Dunkirk, like Get Out. You're on the edge of your seat and other contenders in the same category.
Right. The movie's dense and it's rich in detail. I think if you're someone who loves to study movies, this is a great one study. Like Luca
Guadagnino.
And we
both like this movie. It's a good movie. Yeah.
But it hits those notes very lightly in terms of, you know, the hero's journey or the screenwriting formulas. And yeah, you're left with, upon first watch, a bit of a boring first hour or a bit of a boring first 40 minutes if you're really not focused.
Bill Simmons from The Ringer, who we both love to listen to on one of his podcasts and talking about this movie, he said, this is just a movie about two guys bike riding through Italy.
The criticism is that it's a boring start of the movie. So. And it's a apt criticism, but if it's worthy of study and it rewards you upon further rewatch.
So let's do Darkest Hour is the second one. Let's see why Winston Churchill starring in his own movie, because Gary Oldman wasn't there at all. I only saw Winston Churchill. Why Darkest Hour will pull off the upset of the millennium?
Because, Michael, a mole, perhaps it's the tinker, perhaps it's the tailor, perhaps it's the soldier or the spy, will be costumed by the team that made up Gary Oldman / Winston Churchill, and they will, driven by the circus, Gary Oldman's other persona, they will hijack... or infiltrate the accounting firm and hijack the award, the envelope. And because last year, the gaffe that raised 1,000 tweets, because they don't want to be embarrassed once again, they will let this gaffe go and they will leave Darkest Hour as your Best Picture winner.
So like when Marissa Tomei won
this
her Oscar?
This movie's not winning! It's not winning! I had to come up
with
that convoluted...
Well, I have a much more... I didn't read your reasons, but I have a much more based in fact reason. And that, of course, is that this movie wins if Timothée Chalamet, Christopher Nolan, Jordan Peele, Greta Gerwig, Daniel Day-Lewis, Meryl Streep, Guillermo del Toro, and Frances McDormand all simultaneously come out this week and say that Winston Churchill wasn't that great and that the Nazis were maybe misunderstood.
Oh, my God.
Then this movie will win.
It's not going to win. Why is it going to lose, Mike?
This movie's not going to win. Oh, I want to give it some proper due. We do go through these and say that they will win, and we have to give some serious reasons. So maybe in 20 years, people think that the most memorable thing about this year from film is that Gary Oldman screaming, "You cannot reason with a tiger when your head is in its mouth."
It's a great line.
Which I've already done twice.
I liked this movie. I thought it was a strong B+. I think it has no chance to win the Best Picture Oscar, even though I think it's a strong biopic. It's a Rocky movie for Winston Churchill. And I never thought it was going to be an underdog, Winston Churchill as the underdog movie. I think
people are blown away by him as Churchill.
I think I figured you out, my friend. So okay. Well, look at that teaser for spoilers. No, there's no spoilers this episode. But why is Darkest Hour going to lose? Are we ready for it?
Because it's not a great movie.
Because duh, right? It's a solid film in my mind, like I said. But I think the movie takes artistic license in its most pivotal scene in terms of a structural importance. In that climax scene, it takes the most artistic license. So that ratio, in your mind is full of numbers. No, I just think it pulled back the curtain in its most pivotal scene, and I'm wondering if that's why you don't like it. I'm wondering if that's why you can't put your finger on it, because we're not giving up any spoilers, but the movie took the most liberties in its most critical scene.
Could be.
I wonder if that's it.
Could be. I would like to have a conversation to flesh that out more, but we can't in this episode, but you might be onto something there. I'm on record of saying, if I'm the Academy of One, it's a great performance in an okay movie or a decent movie, and I don't think the decent movie is enough to win it in this year. It's still true after repeat viewings for me. It's an Oscar-worthy performance in a film that lacks the gravity and suspense of a war movie in the same category. Dunkirk did it in a more suspenseful way. I understand it's more of a political thriller, but I think there was a better political thriller in this category as well with The Post.
It's possible that you're right there. I think upon rewatch of this movie, and it's starting to bother me because it bothers you so much. you're rubbing off on me. But the thing about this film is it works so well for so long, and then it gives you pause at the end, I wonder.
Yeah, it certainly does. There's no question about that.
This thing that never really happened is shown to happen at the end, even though you realize that it may have happened later on in the war or whatever. We're kind of being very vague about it. But for me, it hits structural beats. The scene works. I let it go, but I'm like a freaking lemming with the screenwriting formulas these days.
I also wonder if
it doesn't bother me, but it bothered you.
If this is going to be compared more to the films it's up against in the Best Picture category, or if it's going to be up against, more thought of being up against the film that it beat out for that ninth spot in the nomination. Like, are we going to compare this to The Post not The Post so much, but I guess Lady Bird, Get Out, etc. Or are we going to talk about how this beat out The Big Sick and I, Tonya and all those other movies that we think were could have been Best Picture worthy that didn't make the cut?
That might be why we're so aggravated, because I think if both of us had our druthers, you know, we would pick The Big Sick or I, Tonya and put them in over, you know, the two least worthy.
I mean, Coco, Baby Driver, Logan, there's other arguments that could be made.
Oh, yeah.
We'll move on to Dunkirk. Christopher Nolan finally getting that long-awaited Academy nominee for Best Director. How about him taking home a big upset and winning Best Picture for Dunkirk?
I don't have a lot here, but the film was the favorite for much of the award season, so maybe that has a chance. If there was an even number of backlashes, or do I need an odd number of backlashes? Did I just break your brains? I don't know, but Christopher Nolan is due. He's probably overdue, but it's a technical marvel of the film. It's very revered for those reasons, because it might be the best of these nine movies, just as a movie, George
cinematic.
Smiley and the Circus, they hacked the nominations. No, I'm giving you nonsense.
Well, look, there's something going on with Dunkirk, because you're right, it was a big favorite in the Gold Derby over the summer. It was in the Best Picture conversation. It definitely faded out in the last couple months, but there's something going on, because we've talked about Best Picture as a four-horse race But this definitively has odds that it could win. I mean, there are odds. If you look at certain books, it's like 33-1, where the back four nominees are 100-1 or 120-1. There are people out there, people that know these
things.
Famous
last words.
People that know these things are giving it its proper due. So there's a momentum shift.
People that sucker other people into betting on these things are great at doing so.
You hanging around at enough casinos, you realize the book knows what it's talking about sometimes. There's a momentum, is all I'm saying, and some shift towards this actually winning Best Picture. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility as much as it is for, say, Darkest Hour or something like that.
True.
But more likely...
I'll give you that one.
More likely it will not win, so let's talk about why it will not win.
Yeah, it's the wrong year for it. It's the wrong year for this movie to be embraced. No actors broke through the acting nominations. It's too commercial. It's being written off as a technical marvel, and not even that. You know, it's the favorite in the sound categories and really nothing else. Even though I think it's being given the gulp clap for other nominations, because voters are lemmings and voters won't vote for a war movie, however good it is in this year.
Yeah, that's my biggest point too, is that American war movies about American war don't win the Best Picture category. I did a little research. I got some stats. Gold Derby is going to tell you that 16 war movies have won Best Picture. It's very misleading, because that sounds like a lot, but in the last 30 years, there have been 3 war movies to win the award that are centered on American wars or wars that America was involved in. The fourth was Braveheart. Braveheart, obviously, not an American war movie. Schindler's List in 92, English Patient in 96, and the last war movie to do so was The Hurt Locker in 2009.
Wow.
And if you think about the war epics in that time frame in the last 30 years that didn't get the job done, Black Hawk Down, Full Metal Jacket, Inglorious Bastards, Letters for Iwo Jima, Glory, American Sniper, Hacksaw Ridge, and arguably the single greatest war movie of all time. You could say it.
Saving Private Ryan.
There it is. Didn't get the job done, didn't win Best Picture.
We're going to have to do that retrospective. Shakespeare in Love is a solid movie. It's a good movie. Saving Private Ryan.
It's not
Ryan.
The one you remember from
monster.
That year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I would agree.
American war movies don't win Best Picture.
This is also, I mean, American-made war movie, even though it's a British filmmaker or whatever. But
right.
You're right. Christopher Nolan didn't even win the BAFTA for Best Director. This movie didn't even win the British Academy of Film and Television Arts Award. It didn't. And added an A.
That means BAFTA.
The BAFTA, ta-ta. No, the movie didn't even win the Globe with the Hollywood Foreign Press.
Yeah.
It was forgotten back. So I just don't see it having enough momentum at all.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I agree. And, you know, this is, it's tough because there's... It's good. It's a really good movie. We both highly enjoyed it.
Very
strong. Very interesting take on war movies. Due to such little dialogue, and it's so directorially and technically driven, it's going to be a shame to see where it ends up.
I wonder if it's a laser focus as a suspense movie kind of handicaps it and kind of puts a ceiling on this movie.
And having such a great cast, it didn't let them flex their muscles really at all.
True.
Get Out! You would think one of the big
No,
four.
Don't leave. Just that's a movie.
No, you get out.
That's the worst joke.
You get out right now. Get Out, one of the big five that has actual odds, reasonable odds, realistic odds of winning the Best Picture Award. So let's talk about it. Jordan Peele, rookie effort, going to bring home the gold. Tell us why.
Because we're rooting for it, and we're not alone.
Yeah.
A lot of people love this movie. It's so unique. We've praised it for being a social satire, an effective horror movie, an effective thriller, an effective comedy, because it does have that ba-dum-bump. It does have those Lil Rel makes jokes in this movie, so even though it has stakes, you can have a dark comedy. Of course you can, and this is one of those. It's a genre bender, and it's successful at whatever it tries to do, man. It's one of the best crowd pleasers of the year, and crowd pleasers have a strong track record at the Oscars. I know this is like a weird kind of crowd pleaser, or a weird one in the sense that it's a horror comedy and that genre has never been awarded before. But the satires have been awarded before. The crowd pleasers have been awarded before. This is the year of Get Out, as you've said, my friend, setting you up. This is one of those time capsule movies.
Yeah, it's amazing that you talk about how it's a crowd pleaser. The content of this film and how it should offend swaths of people, there's so little backlash against this that I've seen or read or heard about, which is amazing considering something like Lady Bird.
You know what Hollywood loves to do, though?
Yeah, it's true. Loves patting itself on the back.
This is a podcast?
Yeah,
this is a podcast?
It's a video podcast for that one joke, and then we're going to go back to audio only. But yes,
patting
Mike was patting himself on the back. A rookie effort that walks the sharpest of edges while pleasing everybody, like you said, through a horror comedy... about racism,
right,
is nominations in four of the six major categories. This is a big deal. It is culturally relevant. It's
major nominations.
And there's another reason that kind of struck me that I just was doing some research today and I found out this was from an article about Market Watch, an article from Market Watch, I should say. It's where they say that Universal is rumored to have poured about $6 million into the Oscar push of marketing Get Out. That's why it was available on President's Day for free. Universal was in charge of that, et cetera, et cetera. I'll read this quote talking about our favorite buddy, Scott Feinberg. Feinberg said the fact that two of the campaigns of Get Out's competitors, The Shape of Water and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, are being bankrolled by the same studio, Fox Searchlight, also plays to Get Out's advantage. Universal may see an opportunity to go after those movies because they know they have one movie to fully get behind rather than having to divide their money and resources between the two. Kind of an interesting thought that Universal has one Best Picture nominee and Fox Searchlight has to fund two marketing pushes. There's a lot of things here for Get Out to have the momentum to actually win this award and pull off the upset.
There are folks that are diehard prediction enthusiasts slash experts, I guess you could say. IndieWire at Award Circuit, they're going strong for Get Out right now.
Yeah, and I have no idea if this is a reason why it will win or why it won't win.
Mike, the money is literally coming out of your pocket trying to be bet. I am so afraid for you right now. Don't do it.
I don't know. I'm going to stick this in the middle as to why it's a reason for or against, because I'm not sure if it's a reason why or why not. Do you know what the last movie to win Best Picture was that was released in February?
Oh, no. I don't.
Silence of the Lambs.
Really?
Yeah. It was another horror movie, the last horror movie that won Best Picture. Get Out, released in February. I don't know if that means this will win or it won't, but it's an interesting fact, also from that Market Watch category.
And if you hear those sounds in the background of our cell phones, that's us being popular for a change.
Just my bookie. He hears this as we're taping it live, and he's jumping all over me.
It is my Twitter feed, which is not my Twitter feed. It's the show's Twitter feed, so that's cool.
Give me some reasons why bet out. Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Don't do it. I'm serious, bro. Don't bet on the Oscars. It'd be a very bad idea. We'll never be able to spend money on the pod
again. Where'd my microphone go? I had to sell it. Give me some reasons why Get Out will not win Best Picture.
Not enough nominations in the technical categories. Movies like Three Billboards was nominated for Best Editing, Film Editing. It was nominated for Best Original Screenplay. It was nominated for Best Original Score, like I said. So it has more, obviously, the acting and the Best Picture. So it has more of the guilds voting for it because of giving respect to it. You can tell that respect that it's given based on their awards. Get Out, Best Director, Best Screenplay, big awards, but does enough of the Academy vote for it? I don't know.
I don't have reasons why it won't win, and I just changed my pick from Lady Bird to Get Out. So that's where I'm at in life.
I wonder if there's not a strong feminist statement in this movie, or is there because she...
I was going to say there kind of is because Allison Williams plays a huge... Well, and Catherine Keener.
They have a huge role in the movie.
So yes. It's you're right. It is something that's probably subjective, and it could be seen either way. It's probably up to personal preference.
I think the last reason is, and we've said it a lot, but I think it's so prevalent here. Does the new Academy cannibalize itself, and then the old fogey vote wins in a year where it's anybody's game essentially for Best Picture, where you got five people really going after each other? Does the old standby voter get his wish because Lady Bird's got its followers, Call Me By Your Name, Dunkirk and the technical side of it, and then, yes, the Get Out faithful. There's a lot of...
Again, I mean, Get Out and Lady Bird are so intertwined because they're both rookie directorial efforts, and they're both beloved properties. One's a woman, one's a minority, both minority classes.
And then you got the mainstream favorite, which is the mainstream American favorite, which is Shape of Water, the mainstream foreign favorite / BAFTA favorite / Hollywood Foreign Press favorite, Three Billboards.
This is why the Academy needs to release its voting, because it's going to be very interesting. That's a great point. Is the new Academy going to be too cannibalistic and try to be too progressive? Or does it think too progressively? And if it does, maybe Get Out does get hurt, even though it is quite a progressive film, and it's, like I keep saying, a very culturally impactful film. I don't know. It's tough. We can move to another culturally impactful
good
film.
Good segue, because...
The best coming-of-age movie written in a while. Lady Bird from Greta Gerwig. Why is Lady Bird going to win?
Because it might be the best picture of the year.
And what the hell else is it going to win?
I know. We keep saying it. The Oscar puzzle's got a reward, Lady Bird, for something. I don't know where else it's winning because of these other overwhelming favorites.
It's not winning
this
director.
One's up for grabs, right? By all accounts, the best picture, by the betting accounts, you're going to listen to our Oscar pool pod. Yeah. You're going to call it that?
Yeah, for now.
Oscar prediction
subject
pod,
to change
the Oscar
next year.
Puzzle. We're thinking about titles. Someone tell us quick before Mike makes a mishap. No, but our Oscar predictions and looking at all those odds. Lady Bird.
Unless Metcalf pulls off the upset, unless Ronan pulls off an upset.
Lady Bird is surging, isn't it? Didn't you
I
say
don't
it
know.
Was...
I don't know. I you feel like it should be. You feel like it's a big deal and it's getting more traction in one way, and you hear about it, and people. Sasha Stone of Awards Daily retweeted on her Twitter account that there's a Lady Bird walking tour, and there's so a rabid fan base for Lady Bird, like there is for Call Me By Your Name. But in that sense, it's getting more popular, and in the sense we'll get to with why it won't win, it's getting less popular.
Yeah, we're almost there. It's another time capsule movie, though. Like you said, it's an innovative movie for the genre. It's funny as hell at times, and it's as funny as it's dramatic.
Hysterical, yeah.
And it really rips your heart open.
Both parts,
and it's one of those movies that really gets not under your skin, but it moves you emotionally. It makes you think back. It sticks with you. I'm glad you should be my writer.
You're welcome.
You should write for me. So Greta Gerwig does a phenomenal job of in her debut movie in terms of her solo directorial debut.
Yeah, when you look back at this year, this is one of the five movies that's going to stick with you.
Yeah.
And to go through and not award it is going
to
be something.
Doesn't a movie this good have to win something?
But is it this good? Is this just us? Because the main reason it won't win, the sustained and prolonged backlash for any against any movie in this category is Lady Bird of all movies right now. You had the IndieWire anonymous Oscar ballot came out and kind of said Lady Bird wasn't for them. Kyle Buchanan talked to some new Academy members on VultureFor Vulture.com, and they all kind of took swipes at Lady Bird. And he puts on the record that they were female from the producers' wings. I don't know that, quote, I don't know that Lady Bird deserved a Best Picture nomination, said one woman from the producers' branch. Quote, it's a good movie. I just don't know that it gets Best Picture. Two other new female voters echoed her statement. Quote, I'm really proud of Greta. This is her first fucking film as a director, said one female helmer. That's incredible, and she should be insanely proud of it. But is it Oscar worthy? I don't think so.
I wonder if
why
it's...
Why are women tearing women down?
Well, I don't know. Here's my guess. It's like a movie about this bougie white girl trying to live in this elitist, you know. So I wonder if it's like first world problems. Like we're looking at a movie that it's not.
But it's not as if the Lady Bird character is a bougie white girl.
Well, she's living in a Catholic school world, and she's living in the bougie white person world. I don't know. I don't know who. I don't know this. The people who are criticizing it. I don't know their what.
Yeah,
they're,
well, they're anonymous.
Who
they're
anonymous.
Okay. Kyle Buchanan put out there that
nice
they,
if
he
I
covered.
Listen to you when you speak.
No, it's fine. Eventually, one of these days. It's only like our 50th episode.
I'm not a giving thespian. I'm not classically trained. I'm trying to think of my next point where we're talking. Listen, I think Lady Bird is an undeniably great movie. I gotta trust my gut. And I, my gut may have shit for brains upon first watch, but when I rewatch something, I just think it's strong quality. I mean, we were predicting this movie to get nominated. We it was one of our first Oscar sprint profiles.
And it's been my number one for Best Picture because of the Oscar puzzle argument. Now, here's the hypothetical I want to propose to you. If you believe in the Oscar puzzle theory and Lady Bird has to get Best Picture because you can't put it anywhere else, take that aspect out of it. Okay, so let's say magically, I don't know, Saoirse Ronan wins Best Lead Actress. So Rockwell still takes home the supporting, so Three Billboards has
that.
That
would be tough.
Where would you rank Lady Bird if it didn't, quote unquote, have to win Best Picture in ranks of your Best Picture? Does it make the top four, or is it closer to that bottom five?
Here's the thing for me, like in terms of my grades, how movies speak to me, and we're going to talk about this in the Mike and Oscars. I think that Lady Bird, and this is a good teaser for it, Lady Bird is on the top tier of well-made movies this year. I think you can make the argument, you know, whether you call I mean, you can make the argument that it is objectively the best movie of the year. I think you can make that argument based on what I know about films, being having been a film student, having been an amateur, whatever. I mean, you've made films.
Stop playing yourself down. You have an IMDb page for fuck's sake.
Having written movies, I just can't get over what she's been able to accomplish. What these actors are putting on screen is just blow you away, kind of worthy.
So you're
actor.
Saying,
and that's not just Metcalf or Ronan. That's Tracy Letts.
You're saying it deserves to be recognized because it's one of the best films of the year.
Yeah.
Which is probably the right take, and I think I agree with it, as opposed to it deserves to be recognized because it's so unique.
Right. I mean, I think if my favorite movies of the year, this is up there, but is it a top two? Is it a top one? I don't know. But in terms of best movies of the year, I would say that this is a top-tier movie. And yeah, you'd think a top-tier movie's got to win something at the award show that recognizes the best and awards the best of the year.
I think I agree with that line of thinking. I just was curious to get your take on it. Mm. But, oh, man. So, yeah. So, I'm empty-handed.
The puzzles should apply is what I'm saying.
Maybe. Well, you can't take it. I think I want Laurie Metcalf to win the Best Supporting Actress is what I want. But I hate having Janney not win it. Can we have two this year? Maybe we just give Ronan a courtesy one.
There have been ties before. It's so hard to get
in the last 40 years. Yeah,
especially with the numbers
I think
expanding.
Barbara Streisand might have been the last one of the major categories.
Yeah, we might have to do that for retrospective.
Maybe.
So why is it going to lose? Do we get into why it's going to lose? Where are we and what planet are we on?
Phantom Thread is the next movie we're going to talk about. One of also Mike's favorites of the year. Paul Thomas Anderson, Daniel Day-Lewis. I don't think you're allowed in this category with this movie unless you have three names.
Talk about a movie that gets under your
Leslie Manville. That's three names.
Syllables.
Yeah. Why will Phantom Thread win the Best Picture Award in an upset?
Because it has so racked our brains that Mike is confusing words for syllables. No, it might be the best movie of the year. It had a lot of secret momentum going into the nominations. Nobody guessed it was going to get as many nominations. We've mentioned some of these things before, but just same as the Lady Bird argument, it's deserving of a major win because it's in all the major categories. I think everybody is recognized that this movie is of the highest quality. It should win something more than costume design, where it is the only area that it's a favorite right
now. I'm going to pitch something for Hollywood.
It's not going to win Best Picture.
No, but I'm going to pitch something for Hollywood. Here's how we save the industry this year. We take Shape of Water and we just say that it came out last year. And then Del Toro can get his best director over Chazelle.
Right.
Moonlight can still win Best Picture. Emma Stone can still win for her best actress last year. Everyone's happy there.
Right.
It doesn't impact the 13 now. You have 13 spots freeze up this year. And something like Phantom Thread and Lady Bird doesn't have to go through the stress of being elbowed out this year. Everybody wins. What's wrong with that? Why doesn't that happen?
From your mouth to God's ears.
Do we have a time machine? Look, there's a precedent for Phantom Thread winning, which is an odd precedent, and it's one I was kind of crazy to find out through my research, but this reason is going to seem a little wacky and out of place, but just follow me here. Three times since the year 2000, there's been a movie that took home the Best Picture Academy Award that didn't win any other major Best Picture precursor award. Hmm. We're only 3 years removed from the last time it happened that a critical darling movie won Best Picture at the Academy Awards, even though they were shut out of the same awards at the Golden Globes, Critics' Choice, and BAFTAs.
Really?
Birdman won the Oscar over Boyhood, which swept Golden Globes, Critics' Choice, and BAFTAs.
Huh.
Grand Budapest Hotel won the Golden Globe Comedy of that year, so yeah. Birdman was shut out of all those. Wow. It won, and a lot of people thought it should have won, and had a lot of momentum. Also happened in 2005 with Crash winning over Brokeback Mountain, but we're not going to talk about that right now. So there's a precedent here. It's rare. It happens once every 6 years or so, but it happens. It could happen here. This is certainly the movie you think it might happen with to come out of nowhere, because it did get all that love from the Academy in terms of nominations. It got Manville, Paul Thomas Anderson, Daniel Day-Lewis, right. Best Picture, et cetera, in.
It won't happen, but if it did, there were signs and we should have read them.
Yes. That's a great way of putting it, because I agree. I don't think it will, but go ahead.
I just want to say one content reason. I feel like some of these movies, because there's a lot that are well done and are, again, they're inarguably good. I think there are some movies in this category. I think there are some movies that are out there that are where male directors, especially male directors coming out of a big studio, are making movies that are just trying to push a feminist point of view, which is good. I tip my hat to them. However,
but they're doing it because they think it's the right thing to do instead of just doing it.
Yeah, and they're not diving deep enough into the whys and whatever, into their story. They're not immersing themselves, getting lost in their story.
And that kind of lends itself to the half measures we keep talking about.
This is a movie about obsession. It's about a man who's obsessed. If you look at the backstory of the movie, these people are obsessed with writing this story. They're obsessed with making this movie. Freaking Daniel Day-Lewis literally goes and becomes a fashion designer for two years before making this movie.
Yes, he's a crazy
before
person.
Acting. Yeah, he's nuts. And Paul Thomas Anderson is nuts. He literally drew it from his real life. He literally just had an immersion along with Daniel Day-Lewis to make this movie. It's not the male gaze in the sense of, you know.
Well, finish that thought. And yet, the two baddest ass characters, the two by far strongest willed characters in this movie, Leslie Manville and Vicky Krieps.
So it's a movie about a guy looking at the women of his life, changing his life for the better. It's not a movie that's saying, all right, I'm going to try to put myself in the female perspective. It's a man making a movie from a man's point of view. And it's not a shame that it's making a movie from a man's point of view, but it's so supportive of female empowerment.
Almost submitting himself to the will of those strong women around him.
And the argument is so nuanced, it's so detailed, and it's just, it's thoroughly well done and inarguably good in terms of the quality of the cinema. I just think this movie feels more honest to me as a man. Like, I of course, like all of us, we've said it time and time again, it's our time to listen more than it is our time to shout from the rooftops and what our opinion is and mansplain things.
Right.
However,
very odd considering we host a podcast where we just yell for an hour.
Well,
three
however,
times a week.
I think it's important that we can support.
That was a joke, but yes, your point is very well taken. Absolutely. And I think that's where your love for Vicky Krieps in this role comes in.
And this is, this because is Paul Thomas Anderson supporting the movement while still telling his story with the finest details.
I mean, the stuff she's put through, the criticism her character survives, the battle of wits with both against both a man and a woman, it's a lot of hurdles that women overcome in everyday life, and it's usually not given up much of a spotlight on.
Yeah.
And Vicky Krieps' character definitely has that. And again, it is a credit to Paul Thomas Anderson as a filmmaker. It's a credit to Vicky Krieps and Leslie Manville and Daniel Day-Lewis. So sure, I think there's absolutely a feminist statement in this movie. I don't think I would agree with that 110%.
So I'm going to give you the cynical case of this a bit later, but of that argument anyway. But why will Phantom Thread lose, Mike?
Because it's not Get Out, Lady Bird, Dunkirk, Shape of Water. Yeah, that's just the reason. That's the main reason why. You and I fawn over this movie. We love it. But much in the same way I said for our best director category, I don't think the Hollywood and the Academy specifically is ready to go batshit off the wall in embracing this movie, which you'd have to do because it is a batshit concept.
There are some movies that you watch and, okay, that feels like a Best Picture winner.
Yes.
King's Speech is one of those movies back in the day, even though Social Network was super innovative,
probably
your favorite
point.
From that year. The King's Speech felt like, oh my God, that feels like every other Best Picture movie that I watched back when I was in college and I was going through the Best Picture Rolodex trying to see every single one of them before I graduated, just gradually picking those off from my college library. You're learning a lot about me in this episode. However, this movie does not in the least feel like a Best Picture winner. You might say that the Academy has voted in Moonlight and Birdman, which have been unexpected winners in recent years. So perhaps something weird's going to win this year or something that doesn't make sense. But this would be the biggest upset of all time because this has the WTF factor. I don't care who you are.
Oh, yeah.
When you walk out of this movie for the first time, you're probably going to say WTF.
And even if that WTF is more like an like a little exciting.
I was.
It's still not something you're going to be able to immediately rationalize as being the best that you've seen this year because it's just so out there.
When I just seen it, I just had that giddy feeling.
Right.
Exactly.
I was like,
I think I really like this.
Right.
I want to make sure I really like this.
Right.
So you probably got to, you need the confirmation that you really like it. But a lot of the critics have said it's number one for them. So there's a lot of critics like that.
How deep does the Academy's love for their staples go? Everybody loves Leslie Manville. that's good enough on its own. But then you add Paul Thomas Anderson, who people fawn over. And then you add Paul Thomas Anderson with the best actor of our time, or second best, depending on how you feel about Jack. Denzel's in there too, obviously. There's a lot
honestly,
here.
Honestly, it's harder to make the argument against this movie than I thought it would be.
It might be. But then again, the trump card is, you know, this is an addition problem that you have to solve with calculus.
But the argument against this movie is more like, come on, it's not going to win. Like, yeah, that's as far as you can go. I don't know. Now let's get to the post. I want the post. Calling out Spielberg.
Do you have a reason why the post should win?
The press has been under fire. Hollywood may want to make a statement. Yes, it made a statement 2 years ago with Spotlight. Steven Spielberg, Meryl Streep, Tom Hanks have made a whole lot of Academy members a whole lot of dough over the past few years. Some people may think it got snubbed out of more nominations.
And the Academy is a lot of actors, too.
And that's all I have.
They look up a lot of actors. They look up to who are you going to look up to more than Meryl Streep in this day and age and Tom Hanks? And who do you want to work for more than Steven Spielberg? So this movie's not winning Best Picture.
No, it is. I would put this movie in the category of guilty pleasure.
No, I disagree. A Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks, and Meryl Streep movie is a guilty pleasure.
It is a guilty pleasure because the screenplay fucking sucks.
Oh, I disagree with that too. I think that's way too
harsh. It's a bad screenplay. The dialogue is harsh.
There's some bad dialogue.
It's bad dialogue.
There's some bad dialogue. You hate the wigs.
The costumes are idiotic. It's whoever made that decision.
You dislike the wigs.
Whoever made that decision to say Tracy Letts, he needs a wig. We can't go with Tracy Letts looking like Tracy Letts. I need to put a big buffoon raccoon hat on his head because we can't go.
But maybe
with that.
He didn't look like his contemporary.
I don't care if it takes me out of the movie. It's a disaster. I've seen it 3 times in 1 week, and it's just it's an unmitigated disaster. The
Again,
wigs.
If you
the movie's also trying to be like 4 things. It's trying to be this journalism caper, and also this feminist coming to power or feminist character coming to power movie. But here's Spielberg greenlit this movie in a heartbeat,
immediately,
right?
Immediately, yeah.
When he came across the script, because that's the way Hollywood's going. He's doing a movie about this little boy and whatever, this cartoonish movie, and he's like, no, I need an Oscar movie. And that's just I can't help but feeling cynical about the making of this movie and the process of this movie and the fact that it turns into a melodrama and the fact it almost gets me angry because I think the screenwriter who sold the movie to Spielberg got her story kind of hijacked from her, and it got the Spotlight screenwriter to come in and kind
of
reshape it
make
into
it
the movie that Spielberg wanted to make.
Experience.
And unfortunately, I just don't think you get you don't get the feminist statement that's honest and detailed here. You get the words that are lovely, that are nice, that mean something, and you golf clap it, but you just don't get the deep dive that you wanted. And it's a shame because this movie hits these things at arm's length. It doesn't give you the rounded characters. Meryl Streep doesn't have a flaw in this movie except for the fact that she underestimates herself. And I'm not saying that is not a flaw, or I'm not saying that is not her fatal flaw, or you know, enough of a flaw, except it isn't. Because it's just not human to just put her on superhero level. I mean, it's not... You know,
well, you're making.
Yeah, it's not the real person. The real person had problems.
You're making,
and they kind of hinted at it.
Pretty good. The social, in terms with the social justice movements and how it falls short of expectations. There, I think I could do you one better without even getting to that point. But when you hear Spielberg, Hanks, Streep, in any order, that's an Oscar movie. And so this movie had so much to live up to, and it was such a letdown in that regard.
For me, it was probably a huge letdown.
For anyone, because I enjoyed the movie. I really did. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I would have it as a nominated for Best Picture. But you hear those 3 names are attached, and you hear the content that it's based on about Watergate and the Washington Post treatment of the Pentagon Papers and et cetera.
This is not a top 50 movie of the year for me.
It falls short.
50 movies graded higher.
So you have to think that the Hollywood elites that are attached to the Academy, that are in the Academy, have to be let down. If they're so surprised and in love with the surprising feeling they have towards Get Out and Lady Bird and Shape of Water, stuff they didn't see coming, they have to be equally as let down by something like this that they saw coming.
Honestly, is it a watch or don't watch? It's a watch. I would give it a watch all day. It is. It would be a movie that I would enjoy seeing next month. Amidst some blockbusters, I need some substance, but it's not the movie I think deserves to be thrown out at Oscar time because it's just not of that quality. And in fact, I wish they took another 2 months to get the script the way they needed it instead of rushing it, and therefore you got this just this mishmash, and you got a mess.
Well, let's talk about something that's not a mishmash in the eyes
of
most people.
Said the amateur critic to Steven Spielberg.
You're bad. You're bad, Steven. Let's talk about something that's not a mishmash in the eyes of many. The Shape of Water leads all nominees with 13, one shy of the record for a single movie nominees in a single Oscars award show. Let's talk about why The Shape of Water will also take home the Best Picture award.
I'm going to go through these fast because I've said them before. Checks a lot of boxes in terms of issues of the day. It has cast a spell on Hollywood for months now. I think that's because of the nostalgia argument. There's a lot of send-ups and throwbacks and homages to old Hollywood. The premise of the movie is an homage to old Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I do think there's a Mer fetish. I think most people who live on the Western Coast have it. I think they want to get down with some Mers. I just do. But in all seriousness, I think each of these characters are irresistible.
Yes.
All right? They're so thoroughly likable. And you root for them so hard.
Adorable protagonist, someone you want as your best friend. Yeah, it's
quite the feat to accomplish that when you create such an empathetic, sympathetic character. So Del Toro and Vanessa Taylor, they deserve a lot of credit for that. Del Toro deserves a lot of credit in the entire universe, you know, the entire look of this movie, because it's a beautiful looking movie. Your eyes are stuck to that screen. It's hard to watch.
It's like
this
the crescendo
movie.
Of Del Toro's career, yeah. Too. It's his monster in his head come to life for sure, yeah. Under his complete vision, which is a big deal. And it's pulled off. Again, you want to say it's akin to like certain Disney movies that are in existence. Well, yeah, but those Disney movies gave you a warm and fuzzy feeling when you watch them. You know, and this is kind of the grown-up version of those.
Absolutely. It gives me like a Disney movie feel in certain ways. However,
we're going out of our way to not mention the title of the movie that it reminds us of because it would be a spoiler. So that's why we're kind of going out of our way to dance around the title. But what else you got for why it'll win?
Guillermo del Toro and the entire machine, they know how to charm the Oscar voter. They've won a ton of precursor awards. And the American contingent of the Academy seems to have picked this as a Best Picture favorite because the producers voted for it. Yes, SAG went to Three Billboards, but it wasn't nominated
Baptist
for SAG.
Too, yeah. Yeah, you're right. I don't know if this is a reason why Shape of Water won't win or why it will win. So we'll end the will win here and kind of lead into will lose or won't win with this as well. Sasha Stone of Awards Daily, a critic that I have great respect for. We talked to her on Twitter a couple times. She keeps referring to this SAG stat that matters a lot. And she tweeted about it a couple times. And I, for the life of me, couldn't put together what she was talking about. So I just outright asked her. And she was nice enough to give me a response and lay out the case in total. This is her words, and she's a great follow on Twitter. If you have not yet followed Sasha Stone at Awards Daily, I recommend you do so if you're a big movie fan. The SAG stat is that the only movie since the SAGs began to win Best Picture without a SAG Ensemble nomination, because that's the big award of the SAGs, is cast, Best Cast, as it was named this year. The only one to win without a SAG nomination for Best Cast was Braveheart in SAG's first year of 1995. Ever since then, no movie has won Best Picture without at least the Best Cast or Best Ensemble nomination at the SAGs. Gravity couldn't do it. La La Land last year was upset. Revenant didn't do it, et cetera, et cetera. That kind of led me down a deep dive, and why I say this is why it might win as opposed to why it definitely won't win. Obviously, it's the reason it won't win because there's precedent for it. Why it might win is because if there's ever going to be a movie that can break that precedent, it's the one that was nominated for 13 awards, as Shape of Water is. Also, kind of odd that this movie wasn't a Best Cast or Best Ensemble nomination at the SAGs because it has three of the four acting categories have a Shape of Water nominee
in
it.
At the SAGs.
Yeah, at the Oscars. You have Sally Hawkins, you have Richard Jenkins, you have Octavia Spencer, all nominated from this movie. Michael Shannon arguably should have been. So it sent me down a rabbit hole, and I started researching how often it was that a movie would have three Academy Award acting category nominees, but lacked the best ensemble or best cast nominee at the SAGs, and it's already happened three times since 2007. This is the fourth time it's happened. It's happened three times already. The Master in 2012, Up in the Air in 2009, Michael Clayton in 2007, though Tilda Swinton role in Michael Clayton is the only one to actually win her award. So this is just a long-winded way of me saying I have no idea what the hell's going on and nobody knows what they're thinking. Because this is all over the place.
And Octavia Spencer was left out of the SAGs, but it did still get best female actor in a leading role and best male actor in a supporting role,
yeah,
Richard
Hawkins
Jenkins
there. So again, like I said, if there's precedent against it, absolutely deck is stacked, but 13 nominations is still 13 nominations in a year when we talk about how there's not one film that's head and shoulders above the rest.
Right.
There's a group of four or five. This is going to win something. It's going to win Best Director, we both think. It's probably going to win another big one somewhere along the way. Oh, God, is it going to be Best Picture? Let's talk about why it won't be, for sure.
Three Billboards is the favorite, the slight favorite right now, we think. It might be. Again, the BAFTA push, the Golden Globe.
It's backlash, yeah.
Hollywood realizes that The Shape of Water is a good but not a great movie just in the nick of time. That is my guess, because I think it's a very strong movie. I think there has been a backlash, the handicapable people not getting cast in these roles, the Sally Hawkins role, for instance, that is a backlash.
We
that could have
soured
things. We
talked about that with Gus Van Zandt's most recent movie, casting Joaquin Phoenix in that role.
Again, it's just
bound person.
Too simple in terms of its messaging. It's a movie that says nice things, does it get more detailed than just saying the nice things?
That's the biggest
reason. The thing is, like, Phantom Thread wrestles that nice thing to the ground and tells you exactly why it's saying it, and it gives you treatise, but it gives you, you know, a doctorate-worthy treatise, and this movie just says the nice things. I mean, they're both commendable, but it's just on another level, in my opinion.
We rail about half measures, and there's such a history of half measures by the Academy. Why, in the year that has been the most social justice driven,
Get Out is so much more sophisticated,
takes so
than
many
this.
More chances, and it pays off. Three Billboards, yeah, there's a backlash to it. It seemed to have sustained it. There seems to be more good than bad coming out of it in a lot of people's
Three
eyes.
Three Billboards is so much more sophisticated than this movie.
And this is the ultimate half measure. Again, it's everyone is equal. We should embrace everyone, and they all have value. Well, but that's not the biggest movement of the year. The biggest movement of the year has been Time's Up and the racial equality issues. These are movies that are addressing these issues head on, Why not give it to one of those? And it should. And if they do, that's the reason this won't win Best Picture.
Come on, but it's low-hanging fruit. Like, this movie is criticizing the big bad GI turned federal guy, the big bad CIA man who's flexing his muscles and yelling at the...
I gotta tell you, that worries me, because
African-American,
if they think that was just a character instead of an acceptable message, I think Michael Shannon would have gotten a nomination for it.
Think about it. Michael Shannon, the most imposing looking bad guy in any movie,
it's ridiculous,
is screaming and threatening the disabled person, the minority person, who is a maid of all things, who's total. I mean, could you get more on opposite poles in terms of how can you not feel something for those characters? I mean, it's just like too easy. Yes, you have a complicated romance at the center of this. So I guess
All you're doing right now is telling me how badly the best supporting actor category has been botched this year. Because, yes, you're right, it is too easy, and it is in a year filled with subtext, and you just talked about in our going over the Phantom Thread how much that is chock full of it. Get Out has a lot of it. Three Billboards has a lot of it. Lady Bird even has a decent amount.
Three Billboards and Lady Bird have a ton. And plus, they innovate the genres, even though this is... I would say this is an innovative... I mean, in terms of the genre...
It's certainly innovative in that
it's kind of creating its own
straight
genre.
Out of Del Toro's mind.
It's like a
parody...
Well, it's
say what you want about the comparisons to Ape Sapien, but that's also a Del Toro
It's like
touch.
A parody of a fairy tale. I mean,
it's a grown-up fairy tale. That's exactly what it is. But it's... Oh, boy. You have so many good options with so much deep, rich subtext on so many important,
just
pressing matters.
Just pick one of those other ones, Hollywood.
Please!
Just pick one.
Please!
And even Three Billboards, it's just super sophisticated.
Well, there's your lead-in. So tell us why Three Billboards will be the one, as that's our final nominee, why it will take home the Best Picture Award.
We talk about Best Picture winners being the movie of the moment, the movie of the year, literally in terms of the win, but also of the politics, but also of the popularity contest. This movie captures the anger and perhaps even the rage that a lot of Americans are feeling right now. It tries to paint an empathetic viewpoint of all Americans, even the demonized sections of us. There have been few things criticized more than the quote-unquote racist cop in Hollywood, in television, over the past few years. So this messaging does seem to speak directly to our times. The movie asks serious questions about victimization and offers a somewhat hopeful, perhaps, message that can lead to either forgiveness or recovery. I mean, it kind of asks the audience about those questions. We'll talk about the backlash and why it'll lose, but this movie has layers.
I keep saying it has withstood its backlash because the backlash still exists. It's not going to go away. Whether or not you think it's a credible argument is, I could see both sides of that coin.
Yeah,
I say it sustained its backlash because if the backlash was to affect it as bad as we all assumed it would, I don't think the BAFTAs would have been such a glaring sweep for this in favor of this movie like it was. And the BAFTAs happened as they did. McDormand won, Rockwell won, 3 Billboards won Best Picture.
There's like Frances McDormand is like the backlash antidote. Like, she's so cool. She's so awesome to watch give those speeches. Like, could she save this movie from itself in
does
many
it,
ways?
But does it need saving is my point, because it seems to have made it through the woods. Again, that's always going to have that stigma and that stench attached to it. But maybe, you know what? Crash still won in 2005. These things happen. Even if this sours over time, all it needs to do is do well on this one night. And is it the most complete movie of the year? Well, it's up there. And if it is the most complete movie of the year, maybe it's okay that it wins 3 of the major 6 or 7 awards.
Right. We've said it earlier. It has nominations or natimations.
Yeah, either one.
It has nominations across the Academy. It's not a huge technical achievement necessarily, but then again, it kind of is because it's getting nominated for Best Editing and Best Screenplay and Best Original Score.
If this wins the Best Picture Award, do they rename the category the Affleck McDonough Award? Because this is Argo all over again, right? No directing nomination, and here you go for the best movie of the year.
Well, right now it's the Affleck.
Right, so it's just the Affleck.
Can the Affleck happen? But then you would hyphenate it and make it the Affleck McDonough. Sure.
Let's talk about the backlash, though. Let's talk about why 3 Billboards, more seriously, will not win in what would be an upset. I guess it's the favorite right now, slightly, at least if you look at the odds.
If you look at the odds, it's a slight favorite, but it got snubbed for Best Director. It could be very telling that happened. Maybe there's not as much momentum for the film as these other award shows, namely the award shows from across the pond, would suggest.
Are you going to look back at the year of 2017 in film and say 3 Billboards... was the movie that was so much better than Lady Bird, Get Out, Dunkirk, Shape of Water, that it deserved not only Best Picture, not only Best Supporting, but also Lead Actress? It's getting all, it would have to, because it's going to win those 2 acting ones, most likely. Yeah. We all think that. So if you give it Best Picture as well, without giving it a directing nomination, oh boy.
To me, in terms of quality, and yes, the highs of this movie are very, very high.
It's a point you've made. Screenwriting. Yeah, it's a great point.
But to me, in terms of the overall composition of the sins committed, this movie is not on the same tier as some of the others that we've suggested, that we've championed. It's on a tier below. It's still a very strong movie, like I said, because of those high moments. Because they're acting moments. For Rockwell and McDormand are going off.
And it has forces that would seem counterintuitive to be working together. If the Academy has made the concerted effort to get more diverse over the last 2 years and be more inclusive of minority people, minority actors, producers, etc., then wouldn't you think if this had the backlash grounded in racial issues like it did, the widened Academy based on those grounds would have the most contempt for this picture? Wouldn't that kind of equate and make sense in someone's mind?
I just wonder if that new Academy is spread too thin to go against this movie.
And there's the cannibalization argument as well, where there's so many other...
Like, if the new Academy members are spread out, some of them are voting for Get Out, some of them are voting for Lady Bird, some of them are voting for Call Me By Your Name, not enough of them are all voting for one to go against these heavy hitters who the old school Academy members are going to vote for. And it's not just old school Academy members, it's the technical award winners, right? Like, if you think this is the best screenplay of the year, like, a lot of writers are probably like, I can't believe the tricks he's pulling off in this movie. Like, the trick, it's not a trick, but the way he executes a B story with Woody Harrelson is like, blows my mind. Like, I'll never write it anything that good. The way he writes a tell-off scene, it's the best tell-off scene in the last 10 years.
Yeah, it's great. It's
last
great.
10 years.
The but way is that this Martin movie, McDonough? Or but, is that Frances McDormand?
But this movie's all... The structure of this movie is also so unique. Like, it's rarely been done before.
I got to play devil's advocate since we're in the losing... Why to lose section.
Oh, yeah.
If you're saying all that and you're going to award McDormand and Rockwell for pulling off objectively despicable characters as they do...
Yes.
In these scenes, in this tell-off scene, in this racial scene... Is that you admitting that they are more responsible for it than the movie or the writing direction or the direction itself?
I just have a hard time making this argument because I think their characters are learning and they admit to the audience that they are learning. That's why the audience is sympathetic even to a nightmare like whatever Rockwell's character's name was, Dixon. So that character's a freaking nightmare, but that character learns and has an arc throughout the story. You can judge where he lands at the end of it, but he does admit to progressing and getting better and getting that's somewhat of a hopeful message.
And Sam Rockwell is one of the only people to ever drop a hard F-bomb on Saturday Night Live and live to tell the tale, so that has to always
be counted for. Which we live tweeted, by the way. We live tweet a lot of stuff.
We do. So let's get into it for the last time in these category reviews.
Yes.
Let's perfect perfection one last time. We go into the perfecting perfection, which is we will take the 9 Best Picture nominees and re-rank them from 9 to 1 who we think of this group should win the Best Picture Award this Sunday on Oscars Sunday. And Mike, you lead us off with 9. Go ahead.
9 for me is The Post.
Yeah, that's not too surprising.
I enjoyed it at a certain level, but it for me, it's not worthy of a nomination. I love Spielberg. I love Streep. I love The Way They Lied, Tom Hanks.
You got a lot of money out of that line this through our recordings this year.
When
I
re-listen to it, actually, it sounds more scruffly.
Okay.
Is that a word? Scruffly?
No, I think that's scruff McGruff. It's more like
The Way They Lied. But anyway, on-the-nose dialogue, I wish they had another month to gestate the script, if that's what you do with scripts.
They did
gestate them.
Yeah, they did rush it out. That's true, and you did hit on that earlier. But I'll be honest, I like The Post. I'm pretty consistently have said I'm higher on it than you are. It doesn't make my bottom 2. It's my 7. I'm Darkest Hour 9, Call Me By Your Name 8, Post 7. Darkest Hour, I just don't think is the best picture. I think it's a great performance in an okay movie or above-average movie. I don't think... I said this when we're talking about why it shouldn't be nominated, compare it to I, Tanya, even Logan, Coco. There's so many other movies that if you're going to make the cutoff 9 are probably more worthy of that spot than Darkest Hour.
I want to hook you up to, like, you see that X-Men show called Legion? Funnily enough, because we've made fun of the
greatest movie,
movie
of all time.
The greatest title. I can't believe it didn't work with that title. No, the show works, but they hook him up to all the monitors and all the little dots to his head because he's like a Professor X kind of guy. I want to hook you up to all the same things and get your brain readouts on why you hate Darkest Hour so much because I still can't figure it out.
Yeah, me too. I'd love to know.
Figure it would be in your
if
wheelhouse.
I could ever call into this show and let me know, that'd be good. But yeah, so 9 Darkest Hour, 8 Call Me By Your Name, 7 The Post. I love Call Me By Your Name too. I'm very high on it.
Right.
But again, those 40 to 50 minutes to start off the movie are so painstakingly slow in some aspects that it doesn't compare to the others in this category. What do you got for 8 and 7?
8 and 7, I had The Shape of Water, and then 7, I have The Darkest Hour, or Darkest Hour. The Darkest Hour would have been the Emil Hirsch.
Would have been
is he related to Judd Hirsch?
The beliefs that's his son, but I would just speak that as fact without knowing any information on it. Yeah, that's his son.
Ewan McGregor is his son?
Also his son, with multiple different fathers going by Albert Finney being one of them. Shape of Water, you have that pretty low. That's going to be surprising, but that's at my 6. We're just not that high on it.
B+ for Shape of Water, B+ for Darkest Hour, B 86, high B for the post. So they're all kind of in the same tier.
Yeah, again, I think it's important to know these are the nine movies that made it to the best picture of the year.
Right.
So we're not, anything that's number nine or number eight isn't saying that it's a bad movie by any aspect. It's just our rankings of them being subjective as we are because we're pompous asses. What'd you have for number six?
Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Whoa!
It just dropped. It was an A-minus when I seen it at first, and it's just dropped for me. Like, it just needles me every time I watch this story play out. There's plot holes, and there's just far-fetchedness. Again, I'm inventing words here.
No, you're doing well. You're really doing a credit to the English language in this podcast. That's a big story, though, going from what is the literal betting favorite to your number six on the list. Wow, that's impressive.
My number
impressive.
Six on this list. How
don't
about
say,
you,
don't
six?
Don't say we don't take chances. My six was Shape of Water. Again, not that high on it. My five was Dunkirk. I wanted to put it higher. I just don't think it holds up as well as the top four. I think there's a definitive top three for me. One of those is Three Billboards, which you obviously don't feel the same about, but I couldn't put Dunkirk over those top three, and my number four is something I think you're going to have in your top three as well. So
yeah, my number five was Call Me By Your Name. The movie grew on me
can't
upon
begrudge
rewatch.
It. It's a charming movie, and it's very...
Again, you know, going with the grades. Like, I grade these movies like a nerd of all nerds, and I just have it ranked higher, higher numerically.
Yeah, no, I won't. I
numerically.
Won't. Can't begrudge that. So five was Calling By Your Name. What do you have for four?
Four is Lady Bird. And I think the top, for me, I have like a top four that are on the same tier. Like they're all in the A-minus, low A range. I still can't decide. Like the more I rewatch them, the more I bump these four up. And Call Me By Your Name as well. But it's just not at that A-minus level quite yet. Lady Bird is a A-minus all day in my books, and thought it did some dazzling things with and in all phases, because we've said this is one of the most balanced movies of the year, no matter how much you like it. So yeah, that's my four.
Yeah, I think we kind of take the opposite view of that leaked Oscar balloting where everyone was kind of going against Lady Bird for some reason and saying that they don't think it's best picture worthy. I think it's definitely worthy of a nomination at least.
Any year. It's high. I have it ranked higher than Best Picture winners of previous years.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's right there.
Dunkirk was my five. Phantom Thread is my four, which I assume you're going to have pretty high. And Lady Bird was actually my three. So Phantom Thread, I'll let you gush about it because you're more in love with it than I am. But you hit on all the points that I would echo about Lady Bird. I just think it's a very complete movie. And you take into the fact what a big year it's been for women in general and the social justice movements that have all been feminine based and strong feminine statements. And you have strong female leads in every aspect, both in characters,
a lot of these
actress.
Movies, for that matter.
Yeah,
yes.
That's true. That's a good point. I don't think any more representation, any more better represented than in Lady Bird.
I know it's not enough, you know, over the course, but look at, you know, Shape of Water, female protagonist, Three Billboards, Lady Bird.
Could always get better, but it's a step in the right direction.
The post,
for sure.
Yeah, it's getting better. Dunkirk was my three. This was a tough choice.
It's up there, yeah, good.
I love Dunkirk. It was very high on my list throughout the year. I just think a couple movies beat it out, one upon rewatch, well, both upon rewatch actually. So I've been smitten, I've been in deep smit with these other top, you know, these top two movies. But yes, Dunkirk's my
waist
three.
High in smit, I would say.
Just a great a great exercise in suspense, a great
it's so hard
job
for
well
those
done.
For those American war movies to crack. And I keep saying American, knowing full well that the American troops aren't pictured at all in this movie, but it's so hard for those war movies to crack those best picture top one. And there it is. I mean, you're probably higher on it than most people, and even it couldn't crack your number one spot here, which is...
I don't know how to count, so where are we? You're on three or four?
I've gone cross-eyed. Well, let's recap up to this point, because two's going to give away one. So I'm nine, Darkest Hour, eight, Call Me By Your Name, seven, The Post, six, Shape of Water, five, Dunkirk, four, Phantom Thread, and three, Lady Bird. What do you have?
I have The Post, Shape of Water, Darkest Hour, Three Billboards, Call Me By Your Name, Lady Bird, and Dunkirk. So that leaves two for the both of us.
So my number two, I'll go first. My two, which is going to give me away the one. My two is Three Billboards. My one is Get Out. And I don't think that's going to surprise a lot of people to hear from us because we've been pounding the table for that to win a lot. And
while
I think,
the microphones are going as well,
I think it's revolutionary. And I know there's some people I've talked to that don't hold it in such as high regard and think it's something that's been done before. But if you think about the cultural impact of this movie, and the movie I keep hearing it compared to most by people I talk to is what George A. Romero did in Night of the Living Dead or yes. Dawn of the Living Dead. Night of the Living Dead. That was 60 years ago, 50 right. years ago. So this movie is something that comes around once every 50 or 60 years. And Jordan Peele aced it in his rookie directorial debut, horror comedy. The degree of difficulty for this movie was so, so high overall. I know I said Dunkirk was maybe more difficult as far as the directorial odds go, but just to pull off the impact of this movie, how well received it was, how everybody right. loved it, the performances you get out of it, I gush over and over, but I do think it should win Best Picture out of this group.
Yeah, for all those same reasons, I have it in my top two as well, except I have it at two.
Oh!
It's a surprise, and I even on the drive up here, I thought about maneuvering things around.
You did have Peele as your one for director and screenplay, though.
Yes, so if I was the Academy with working with these nominees, I would have Jordan Peele walking out with multiple Oscars, yeah. and I would have it a close second, and my guess is that if my reality was our actual reality, then Get Out would win over my best, but I'm picking Phantom Thread at my number one.
You love that movie, huh? Obsessed. Go ahead. Tell us why.
Yes, I think it's one of those movies that just gets under your skin and stays there. Paul Thomas Anderson films have a tendency to do that. I love what it's saying. I love how it's saying it. I think it's a masterclass in filmmaking and acting and screenwriting. You put the whole composition together and you got a great score. The costume design is phenomenal. The cinematography, it kind of picks its spots where it gets a little showy, but at the same time it's a really nice blend, and I was shocked to see how cinematic it actually was. And it's just one of those movies that I can't get out of my head. That's the one movie this year that I'm just completely obsessed with, that I've watched 6-7 times already and in theaters.
Right.
So I have it hasn't even had that second life for me on VOD on video. I just keep it's playing in the leather seats theater at my local movie spot, so I just keep going with the movie pass and sitting and enjoying it. It's I can't help myself, so that is my number one right now. I don't know if 6 months from now or a year from now I would vote for Get Out and shuffle this around, but yeah, that's a talk for another day.
I would love to see the correlation between people that actually have given this movie, The Phantom Thread, multiple repeat viewings, and if everybody after repeat viewings ranks it higher, because it's the point we hammer again and again. You have to give that something like that more than one watch.
The devil's in the details for sure with this movie.
And in that vein, we are done.
Wow.
The Oscar sprint rush category review, it's over.
It's a series.
All we have left for you
completion
is our actual selections, our predictions. That'll be coming up soon, as well as the Mike, and Oscars. Now,
this is our year in review.
Mike, and Oscars is our little award show. It's our chance to kind of express who we think the actual winner should be, the nomination should be. It's basically one long perfecting perfection with our reasons why, because we want to point you towards what our favorite movies and performances, et cetera, of the year were.
You're going
to
be surprised because they're not all Oscar movies.
They are not. Absolutely not.
I think, again, something we tried to do all along is just be honest with you folks. So we love a lot of these Academy Award movies. There's going to be a lot of crossover. Oh, yeah,
some for sure, without question. But here's what we're going to do going forward. We're going to try to get all that out prior to this Sunday, Academy Sunday. So you have the Mike, and Oscars to look forward to. You have our official predictions to look forward to. We haven't set in stone what we're doing this Sunday yet. We know we're going to be live tweeting the show as we always do. As Mike just said, we are at MM and Oscar for that on Twitter.
Yes, sir.
Make sure you stay in tune to that. We want to hear from you guys. We're going to banter during the show without question. We're going to have something for you after the show in a kind of a rundown way. This is the big week for us, as it has been. And that's why we've been pushing out so much new content to get you fully prepared.
And by the way, I think I'm going to announce it now. We're going to launch a website. It's going to have a blog to it. It's going to have all our podcasts connected to it. I don't think we're going to get it out before the Oscars. So if you're listening to this pod as kind of a year in review or one of those many year in review pods, check out our website 3 months from now as I travel to the future.
I was going to say, I can't wait until you and I have a giant falling out and we never speak to each other after the next week.
Well, I'll have bought the domains for the website before then. So there'll be one of us on there.
So yes, look,
typing to the void.
We're trying to grow. We appreciate all this love and support. We appreciate the downloads. Truly, if reality does suck, we're hoping that we're giving you an outlet that you can watch movies with us and hear some good stuff. And we're going to keep on pushing that boulder up that hill.
Yes.
We're Mike, Mike, and Oscar, guys. We are Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on Twitter, Mike, Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com, Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Reddit, anywhere you hear podcasts, Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, etc. We should be there if you type in Mike, Mike, and Oscar. We want to hear from you. Keep the comments and social media tags coming. We got to get to social media shout out soon. We promise we will. It's just been a crazy week.
We forgot again.
Yeah, it's been a crazy week. So
yeah,
this is a tough
week to do that next week.
And reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us, guys. And we appreciate your listens, and we'll be with you soon.
Ciao, buddy.
Later.